Last week, a local immigration judge heard the deportation case of Henry, a Long Island teen originally from El Salvador. Henry had been working with the FBI for over a year to identify MS-13 gang members responsible for a string of brutal murders on Long Island. The problem is, Henry was once a member of the gang himself. He is now on MS-13's kill list for cooperating with law enforcement, but ICE wants to deport him anyway. We don't know Henry's last name, but we do know his story, thanks to an explosive investigation by ProPublica reporter Hannah Dreyer. The story is titled A Betrayal, and it's co-published with New York Magazine. Hannah, welcome to the studio.
Good to be here.
Hannah, so this piece has gotten a lot of attention since it came out last week. You have some updates for us on Henry's case, but first, let's start with how did you meet Henry?
So I first heard about Henry's case back in October, and at that point, he was in ICE detention, and he thought and his lawyer thought that it was too dangerous to go public with what had happened to him, and they still had a lot of hope that he might not be deported back to El Salvador. But as the months passed, it became more clear that he was really on track to be deported to his death, and so eventually, Henry decided to talk to me, and I met with him in ICE custody.
So take us back to Henry's life in El Salvador before he moved to Long Island. How did he get involved with the MS-13 gang?
He grew up very poor in El Salvador. His parents left when he was just a little kid and went to Long Island. And he struggled with things like having enough to eat, with being able to afford school uniforms. And the gang was very present in the slum that he lived in. And an older man in MS-13 started to recruit him.
I see. And so in El Salvador, MS-13 is run by these older men, right, that are more hardened and as opposed to who runs MS-13 here?
Yeah. So the man who recruited Henry, his name was El Destroyer, and he had horns tattooed on his face. He had MS-13 tattoos all over his body. He'd actually been in Los Angeles and been deported back to El Salvador and then started running this gang in Henry's neighborhood.
I see. And what did Henry do for MS-13?
At first, it was easy stuff. It was being a lookout when rival gang members came into the neighborhood, or passing messages among gang members. Then they started asking him when he was about 10 to come and help them show strength in numbers when there were fights. And finally, when he was 12, they asked him to pick a gang name and beat him for 13 seconds. And they led him to a coconut grove where he was asked to kill a man.
Wow. And so where were Henry's parents at this time?
Henry says that he rarely spoke to his parents. They were living in Long Island, and the idea had been that they would work in Long Island and send home money, but the money never came. And little by little, he started talking to his mother less. He lost track of his father, and really he was living with his grandmother.
And what was that relationship like? So he was living with his grandmother, but it seems like he was also very close to his grandfather.
Yeah, his grandfather was sort of what he says he had instead of a real father figure. And he didn't ever really talk about being part of the gang with his grandparents. He thinks they probably knew, but they didn't ever address it until one day when he was 15, he got a death threat. And he told his grandparents that he had to leave, that it wasn't safe for him anymore in El Salvador, and if he stayed, they might be killed as well. And his grandfather, when he left, said, if you're going to leave, I want you to make a break with this gang and start a new life and pick a better path.
And at that point, was Henry, was he traumatized by the violence that he had seen and actually perpetrated himself? And did he want to get out of the gang at that point?
Absolutely. I mean, MS-13 is a very strange gang. It's a gang that's not about making money. They don't really sell drugs. They don't have real businesses. It's all built around violence. And violence was the core thing that Henry was asked to do as a member of MS-13 in El Salvador.
And why is that? What is the end result of the violence?
I think it's really about trying to build a sense of community among the gang members. I mean, this is an unusual gang. It was started by refugees in Los Angeles, people who had fled civil war in El Salvador and were looking for a new sense of community in this foreign country. And then it was brought back from Los Angeles to El Salvador, but it stayed this unusual criminal enterprise. And when researchers ask MS-13 members why they joined, 80% of them say it was for the sense of community, not to get rich, not for anything else.
So when Henry first got here, he gets a job at a factory punching the perforations you see in toilet paper, and he's extremely isolated and lonely. His mom's involved in a domestic violence situation, and his father seems very emotionally distant. But then he starts his freshman year at Brentwood High School, and things actually begin to look up. Tell us about that year.
Yeah, Henry describes this as the best year of his life. He loved high school. He had gone sometimes to this sort of one-room schoolhouse back in El Salvador, and the high school in Brentwood is this huge sort of fortress-like building. There's all these activities there. He was in bilingual education classes with other kids like him from El Salvador, and he made friends with these kids who were just living a totally different life, who didn't work nights at the toilet paper factory, whose parents had taken care of them their whole lives. And one of his friends gave him a bicycle. Others would go and visit him at his job. He would play soccer with them every day after school. And he says for the first time in his life, he really felt safe there.
And did he feel like MS-13 was behind him?
I mean, he worried when he first got there that somebody might find him in this high school, because MS-13 is for life. Once you're in the gang, you're not allowed to leave for any reason, and the punishment for leaving can be death. So initially, he worried a lot about that, but as the year passed, he sort of relaxed, and yeah, he felt like he was keeping his promise to his grandfather and had started fresh.
I'm Cindy Rodriguez, and I'm speaking with ProPublica's immigration reporter Hannah Dreyer about her recent story, A Betrayal. This is Midday on WNYC. So what happens? MS-13 does find Henry.
So when Henry started his sophomore year, he recognized a kid who had been part of his gang in El Salvador, this kid called El Fantasma. And El Fantasma had been sort of in the upper ranks of the gang. And he told the other gang members who were in Brentwood that Henry was basically on the run. And once these other gang members found out, Henry was in a lot of trouble. So the MS-13 clique in Brentwood is called the Sailor Clique. And the sailors told Henry that he had to go to the woods and he had to receive his punishment. And Henry didn't know what would happen, because in El Salvador, it really can be a death sentence to try to leave the gang. But on Long Island, the gang is run by teenagers. It's sort of a softer version in some ways. And they punished him by beating him again. And then he was back in the gang.
And so listeners might remember the MS-13 killings of two teenage girls in Brentwood in September of 2016. Was Henry involved with that?
Henry did have a role. He was beaten back into the gang. And he stayed on the outskirts. He never rose through the ranks of the Long Island MS-13 clique. But one of the things that he had to do was report up any sign of disrespect. And he was in class when he saw one of these girls flash a blood sign at him. And he flashed the MS-13 sign at her and then told the gang leaders, who were these teenagers who lived with their mother, what had happened. And the gang leaders told him that they were going to watch her, and if she kept being disrespectful, she would have to fall.
And so she did fall. So they did kill her.
Yeah.
In front of the person.
Yeah, no, so not too long after that incident, the gang leaders decided that she had continued to fight with members of the Sailor Clique, with MS-13 members, and they authorized her murder. And some other teenagers saw her one day walking home from school with a friend and killed them both brutally.
And so how did this impact Henry?
That was really a pivotal moment for Henry. He had seen a lot of violence in El Salvador. He was used to violence, but he says that he watched the parents of these girls crying on local TV news, and he started to think that his grandfather would cry like that for him if something were to happen to him. And he started to think about all the people who had loved these girls. He says that in El Salvador, people were often abandoned by their parents. He didn't see that kind of reaction as much. And he actually thought about talking to the parents of these girls personally, but decided in the end to go to a teacher.
Right. So eventually he reaches a breaking point, and he has this moment in English class where he just unburdens himself on paper. It's so vivid in your piece. Tell us what happened.
The way Henry describes it is he felt like a piece of string being pulled at both ends. He was just thinking constantly about these murders that had happened and feeling pressure to stay in the gang, feeling unable to get out of it. And one day in English class, he just started writing down everything he was thinking. And then soon he was writing down everything that had happened to him in El Salvador. And the other students in the class noticed him sort of writing furiously in this notebook with his hood pulled up. And they said, like, oh, Henry's on fire. And at the end of the period, he hid what he had written in another assignment and gave it to his English teacher and started to watch her read it and realize what he had done and sort of fled the classroom.
Wow. And what did the English teacher do?
Well, she had never gotten anything like this. She, you know, she's a suburban English teacher.
Right.
And she felt like she was a mandated reporter. This kid was saying that he was in fear for his life. And so she took that paper and she gave it to a guidance counselor who gave it to the police.
And so this is where Henry meets George Politis and Angel Rivera. Who are they?
So George is the school resource officer. He's a Suffolk County police officer who works in the school. And Angel Rivera is on the Long Island gang, FBI gang task force. And George couldn't offer Henry any kind of protection, but the FBI maybe could. And so Henry decided to talk to Angel Rivera in hope of getting into maybe witness protection.
And so Angel and Henry begin texting each other. How frequent were those texts, and what sort of information was Henry handing over to Angel?
So it's funny reading these text exchanges. Henry sounds almost like a kid sort of debriefing their parents. Hmm. He's telling Angel about basically how his day is and what the gang kids are telling him. So Henry would say, this guy in the gang is telling me that if I don't start putting in more work, I'm going to be in trouble. And Angel would sort of try to steer that towards something that could lead to an arrest. Like, does that guy have a gun? Is he in this country illegally? Can we catch him with something? And Henry would sort of want to talk more about just what his life was like at that moment and his own fears and his own experiences.
Hmm. So was it almost like he saw Angel as a friend or a mentor or somebody that he could just vent to?
Absolutely. I mean, he describes thinking about Angel a little bit like he thought about El Destroyer, the gang leader back in El Salvador, sort of a father figure who was showing interest when not a lot of other adults were.
And does he hand over to Angel anything that's valuable?
So he told the FBI and local police gang names. He told them about the murder of these two girls. And that he also gave information about a quadruple homicide that happened on Long Island.
Wow.
He told them who was next on the kill list. He says that he wanted to try to prevent some of these murders and didn't feel like he could do anything talking directly to the gang leaders, but he hoped that maybe law enforcement would step in.
So Henry allowed you access to his cell phone so you could see the texts and other social media posts, I think. In fact, you wrote that he gave you more access than any source has ever allowed you, and that worried you because he's young and you didn't know if he fully understood what it meant to give this information to a New York City reporter.
I mean, I still think about it a lot. Can a teenager in real fear for his life give informed consent? I'm not sure. I know that he really wanted his story told, and I spoke a lot with his immigration lawyer to try to sort of backstop those decisions. And he gave us complete access. Some decisions we made for him, like we're not using his last name because I don't think that would be safe for him. We didn't show his face because I don't think that would be something that he would want out there when he's older. But these were sort of limits that we imposed on ourselves because Henry was completely open.
It's a difficult situation. I'm Cindy Rodriguez, and I'm speaking with ProPublica's immigration reporter Hannah Dreyer about her recent story, A Betrayal. ¶¶ This is Midday on WNYC, and I'm back with ProPublica's immigration reporter, Hannah Dreyer. So, Hannah, did Henry ever have a formal witness protection agreement with law enforcement?
He didn't, and that turned out to be really key in what happened to him. So the way this usually works is a witness will come forward, and usually this is a person who has charges hanging over them. People usually don't talk to federal authorities unless they have a lot to lose. What was weird about Henry is he came forward just voluntarily, and so there was never any need to negotiate a deal. And he just talked, and Angel, his handler, just listened. And in the end, that turned out to be sort of terrible for Henry.
Right. So as Henry was serving as an informant, the Trump administration was cracking down on immigrants, especially those with gang affiliations. And Henry thinks he's going to be protected, but he gets picked up by ICE instead. So did the Suffolk County police share Henry's information with ICE agents?
That's exactly what happened. Suffolk County was collecting information about Henry in a central police database, basically. And when ICE came around, the police department just turned over all of that information to ICE agents. And ICE says that they had no idea that Henry was an informant or was cooperating with police. They just saw that he was a gang member. And one day while Henry was getting ready at home to go to work, these agents came and he was shocked.
So now he's in a detention center with MS-13 gang members who suspect he was an informant and who are making these veiled threats, or maybe more explicit threats too. You were speaking to him from the detention center as this is all happening. What was his mood like? Could you hear anxiety in his voice?
He sounded so, so dark and so afraid. I was talking to him for weeks from this detention center. So he was at a phone bank with all of these gang kids sort of around him. And he would whisper into the telephone receiver the kinds of threats that he was getting. He would talk about his fear for his family. He would sometimes sort of sketch out his own imagined death. He would say, if I go back to El Salvador, I know what will happen. They'll stake out my grandparents' home. They'll take me to the same coconut grove. And he was just sort of constantly living this nightmare of what he thought was going to happen in a couple weeks.
Wow. So tell us about the letter that Henry wrote to his lawyer, sort of pleading for help.
So these kids who were threatening him had memos from ICE saying why they were being detained, and they wanted to see Henry's memo. But Henry couldn't show anyone his memo because the memo laid out that he was informing. And these kids were telling him that if he didn't show that memo, he was going to be killed. They would know he was a rat and they would take action. And so one night he sat on his bunk and he wrote this letter to his immigration lawyer saying, I'm very sorry. I know my handwriting is very shaky. I'm just very scared. I need somebody to give me a false document so that these gang members don't think I was informing.
And what does the lawyer do?
Well, the lawyer can't create a false document, but he did try to get Henry some help. He went to a federal prosecutor and asked if that person would intervene, and he went to Angel Rivera, the handler, and asked if Angel would testify on Henry's behalf. And Angel said that he couldn't testify, it was too dangerous, but he did provide the names of two boys that Henry helped get arrested.
And so Henry came in not illegally, but as an asylum seeker. Does his attorney continue to press for asylum for Henry?
Yeah, so Henry is not an illegal undocumented immigrant. Henry has been pursuing asylum for several years. That's a process that just takes a long time. And his hope is still to get asylum. I mean, he fled El Salvador in fear for his life, and he's in even more fear for his life now that he's been labeled an informant. And he had a hearing on last Thursday.
Okay.
And it was looking very bad for him. His own immigration lawyer said that it was going to be a terribly hard case to win, because he had told police about all of these things that he had done. He had told police about participating in a murder when he was 12 years old. And that on its face could disqualify him from asylum.
Okay, but so just to be clear, this hearing that happened was post your story coming out.
Yes. So Henry's hope in telling his story was that people would read it and it would somehow change his fate. And in this courtroom on Thursday, there were copies of the story all over the room. The judge seemed to have read the story. The ICE lawyer had absolutely read the story. And the judge decided that he just wanted more time. And he wanted to hear from Angel. He wanted to hear from the teachers. He sort of wanted to hear from the list of sources in the story. And
so Angel will testify.
It's looking like Angel will testify. The very latest on that is the Suffolk County Police Department is saying that Angel is an employee of the FBI and has to be subpoenaed in a complicated way. But right now, all signs point to him talking.
I see. And have you had conversations with George Politis or Angel?
Neither of those people can comment on the record on this case, just because it is an ongoing criminal investigation. Both George and Angel are still working around MS-13. And, there have been more than 25 murders on Long Island the past 2 years related to MS-13. And a lot of those are open cases. So it's complicated for anybody in law enforcement to talk.
And what about his teacher, his English teacher?
It's looking like his English teacher is also going to testify on his behalf. The school says that it had no idea that by turning Henry over to police, it might be endangering his life. The school superintendent says that he thought that police would protect Henry, or at the very least, keep people from knowing that Henry had talked. And so now school officials are sort of lining up behind him and are working with his immigration lawyer to see what can be done.
And so at the hearing, I think you write that the ICE attorneys didn't want you in the room. Is that right?
Yeah, it was really surreal. The ICE attorneys a few times pointed to me in the courtroom and said, there's a reporter here. She's taking notes. She has a notebook and we don't know what could happen to this. It could be published.
Interesting.
Yeah, it seems like ICE does not want more publicity on this case.
And what did the judge say to that?
So the judge responded by asking Henry a few times if he consented to me being in the room and if he wanted media attention. And he's been clear the whole time that he wants his story told and he wants people to know what's happening to him. So Henry said that I could stay and I was allowed to stay. But I've covered a lot of court cases and I've never seen anything like that.
I'm Cindy Rodriguez, and I'm speaking with ProPublica's immigration reporter Hannah Dreyer about her recent story, A Betrayal. This is Midday on WNYC. So much is at stake for Henry. He's basically a dead man walking because of cooperation with the FBI. Are you worried? You are worried. You told me that earlier. But since the story came out now and is more public, are you even more worried?
Yeah. Henry is in very high spirits these days, but the truth is he could still be hurt in custody and he still could be killed when he's released. If anything, he's probably more marked now as an informant.
When was the last time you spoke to him?
I spoke to him yesterday and he sounded great. I mean, he sounds like a different person this week. A lot of people have been writing in to express their support for him. He wants to join the U.S. Army if he's released, and some active duty Army members and veterans have written to me wanting to get messages to him. So I was reading him some of those letters, and he just kept saying, wow, wow, and talking about how he wants to write back to those people. He's amazed, I think, by the response to the story because he was so alone for 8 months in detention.
Wow. And people have even been donating money, is that right?
People have donated almost $20,000.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's another reason I think he sounds so much more optimistic now. When I first talked to him, I had to pull out of him what he might do if he was released. He didn't want to talk about the future at all because there was no real safe plan for him. But now he talks about countries that he might move to if he's deported. And he talks about cities that he might move to if he's released. He can't go back to Long Island or El Salvador ever. Those places are unsafe for him now. But he's fantasizing about his life in another place.
So how has this affected, teenagers, gang members, informants wanting to come forward? I know in your piece you say that you've interviewed advocates on Long Island who've told immigrant youth not to cooperate with law enforcement because this could happen. What's happening within that advocacy world?
I mean, if police can't protect informants, it's hard to imagine that anybody will want to talk to police. And advocates on Long Island right now are warning, especially immigrants, not to say anything to Long Island police because they're not protecting kids like Henry. And because a lot of people are ending up sold out to ICE and in immigration detention. It's crazy to think that people in the gang aren't going to see what happened to Henry. This is a gang full of teenagers. They talk to each other.
Right.
And anybody who sees what Henry's been through is not going to want to go down the same path.
Does he have any other support? Are his parents involved at this point?
No, nobody's come to visit him in jail. He's been in jail in New Jersey for months and months, and nobody's really there for him. This is why he wrote to his immigration lawyer asking for this document. There was nobody else for him to ask. And, you know, I think that's something that weighs on him, and also why he's so interested in the responses that people have given to the story, because it's sort of this community that he doesn't have on his own.
So how many suspected MS-13 gang members has ICE detained in Long Island, let's say in the last year?
About 200. And some of those people have been rounded up, put in ICE detention, but then released because there hasn't been enough evidence that they really are MS-13 members.
Hmm. And actually, some of them, Henry gave the names of some of them, and so he's in detention and they've been released. Is that
exactly,
right?
Exactly. Because unlike Henry, some of the people who Henry helped get arrested did not admit to police that they were part of MS-13. And so they're back in high school now, and Henry sitting in jail.
And the police weren't able to prove any sort of gang affiliation.
Exactly.
Are kids also getting swept up that legitimately have no connection to MS-13?
I mean, it's a tough question to answer. Mm-hmm. My suspicion is what's happening is a lot of sort of gang adjacent kids are being rounded up. So people who maybe are hanging out with gang members but aren't MS-13 members themselves, maybe kids who are trying to front like they're MS-13, so they're wearing Nike Cortez sneakers or they're wearing Chicago Bulls jerseys, which are symbols of MS-13, but
why
who
is
aren't.
That?
MS-13 loves anything that has that has horns on it, because their sort of mascot is the devil. It's a gang that came out of rocker culture, like heavy metal culture. And so the Chicago Bulls, they like the bull horns. They like Nike Cortez sneakers because they sort of look like horns with the long Nike swooshes.
I see. You know, I meant to ask you, did you go to El Salvador at all and see where he came from?
I didn't go to El Salvador for this story, but I might for the next story.
I see. And what are some of the places that Henry is dreaming about going? Or maybe you shouldn't say.
I mean, I'm a little hesitant to say.
Yeah, that's okay.
Just because he's going to be hiding from this gang for the rest of his life. You're not allowed to leave. And if they find him, he could well be killed. So it's not a light thing. He's talked about going to places that don't have a lot of Central American immigrants. Police on Long Island, when they've talked to me about his case, have suggested that he should go to the Midwest. And people from all over the country have offered to take him in. I think people from 15 states now have offered spare rooms, have offered to adopt him,
really?
Offered to set him up with jobs. Yeah, so he'll have some options.
Huh. And how has he responded to that?
He's just can't believe it. He asks lots of questions about who these people are, and he asks me to thank them. He wants me to print out some of these letters that I've been getting and send them to him, which I probably will do. But I think he's sort of a kid that's been looking for support and for community for his whole life. And now he's farther than he's ever been from any family members, from the gang, from his friends. And so it's been really important to him to be able to sort of picture what his life could be if he's released.
Okay, so when is the next hearing?
The next and probably final hearing is May 22nd, and it's going to be here in New York. And Henry's sort of counting the days, and his lawyer is frantically trying to get all of this testimony together before that.
Okay, and will the judge be deciding whether to grant him asylum? Will he be deciding just whether to deport him or not? Are these two separate things?
Yeah, so the judge might grant him asylum at this hearing or might issue a order of deportation. And it's hard to say which way it could go, but a lot is riding on this final hearing, yeah.
But it seems like his spirit is up.
I mean, he's laughing when I talk to him. I hear him sort of like shouting to his fellow inmates when we talk. But he's a teenager, you know, he's really young and he's had a lot of trauma. And I think he's enjoying right now not thinking about how much danger he's in. But the truth is he's still in huge amounts of danger, depending on what happens at the end of May.
And has his lawyer said to you what the chances are that he'll be successful?
The lawyer is feeling pretty optimistic. This was a case that looked unwinnable until last week. And now the immigration judge seems to sort of be outlining a list of things that he wants to hear that could support a decision to give Henry asylum.
And so you'll be there, I'm sure, at the next hearing, and you'll follow this through to the end?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I'll be talking to Henry probably every other day until that hearing.
I'm Cindy Rodriguez, and I've been speaking with ProPublica's immigration reporter Hannah Dreyer about her recent story, A Betrayal. Hannah, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me here.